Hello, everyone. You have entered the battle phase. It is I, the Midnight Bard, your favorite bard, and I cast Alohomora. Joining me, as always, is the boys, starting at the top with Helix, who casts Fireball.
I don't care if I'm in a room like that.
Next up, we have Brother Gamma, who casts Small Your Peepee.
No, I thought I cast a curse.
And lastly, we have Sacro, who casts a very tall shadow.
I am 6 foot one. Sometimes. Depends on who's asking.
With all this magic talk, I guess you guys can tell what we're doing today. Today we are talking about the Great Mage Returns after 4,000 years, which was Gamma's recommendation for the manhwa that we should read. It is one that took us forever to get to because originally we were just going to do like the first 20 chapters. And then we decided that we were just going to do up to chapter 91, which is the conclusion of the first season of The Great Mage Returns. And given that I'm a slow reader, that just took forever. So let's see. A couple of things that I guess I should mention before we get started is, number one, spoiler warning. We will be discussing the entirety of the first season of The Great Mage Returns. Unless Gamma and Helix, who have read it to completion, want to say something else about it that I just do not catch because I have not read beyond the first season. Additionally, I want to say that I am happy that we went ahead and read the entire first season as opposed to the first 20 or so chapters that we were going to do initially. And the reason why that is because I feel like if we had stopped at the 20th chapter, I wouldn't have liked it as much. And there will be reasons for that that I will explain later. But yeah, so before we get started, welcome to everybody listening out on the platforming, the platform, the podcast platforms.
You've been platformers, talking too
much. All Crash platforms. Bandicoot, all the platforms, Xbox, PS4.
PS4?
We're on PS5 now.
We're on yeah.
PS5.
Well, I have a 4 sitting here in my office, and I have a 5 sitting out in my living room, so sometimes I forget that there's a 5 because I don't spend much time in my living room.
Special shout out to all 4 people listening on your Switch. I think it's possible. I don't know. Never tried.
Oh.
The Switch can get Spotify, right? Like, I think Spotify is, like, our biggest platform.
Is it on the Switch, though? I don't think so. It's got YouTube and Netflix, maybe.
My Switch is off to the side, so I know that it's a possible thing. I don't know. So, that being said, let's start off by doing the recap as we normally do, right? And there's a couple of story arcs here that I might forget, so maybe you guys can kind of fill in the blanks wherever I fall short, right? So, the Great Mage Returns after 4,000 years is something that I've also heard called the Archmage Returns after 4,000 years is the story of Lucas Trauman, or Blake Frey, depending on how you look at it. Lucas Trauman is the titular Great Mage, and during his time 4,000 years ago, he was actively in battle against a group of entities known as demigods, particularly the one called Demigod Lord, who captured Lucas Trauman and placed him in almost like a pocket dimension where his consciousness was trapped for 4,000 years. Fast forward 4,000 years, and we catch up with Blake Frey, who is the weakest member of the Frey clan, attending magic school, where he gets bullied terribly to the point where he must self-end. However, when he is in the process of self-ending, somehow, instead of dying, has the consciousness of Lucas Trauman transported into his body. I don't know what becomes of Blake Frey. It's almost like he's deleted from existence after that point. And Lucas Trauman just walks away with his body, basically.
I think there's a few mentions later on that Blake Frey is still inside the same body.
It's like he absorbs his consciousness because, like, there is time where he says that his body still acts on instincts whenever
right.
a specific person is in range.
Or when he goes home, he went to his home and he was like, oh, I feel familiar with this place for some reason. And he's like, oh, it must be Blake's memories.
Yeah, so there's a lot of things like where you know, we reference Blake, but it's almost like, well, also he doesn't do anything, right? Like, so that He's of importance a little bit, but not a lot.
It's his background that's honestly important.
Right. And so once Lucas Trauman walks away with Blake Frey's body, which honestly, I think his name is Frey Blake. I think Blake is the last name. I might have been getting Frey's that backwards.
Frey's first name.
Right. So he walks away with Frey Blake's body, and he basically starts a journey to augment his magical acumen to the point where he can reach the levels which he had before the 4,000-year imprisonment. Because, you know, Frey Blake is kind of a weak guy. He doesn't have a lot of strength behind him. So Lucas Trauman, who is just was a baller and now is trying to get to that point again by training Frey Blake's body in the same way that he trained back when he was the Great Mage. He goes on a journey where it involves seafaring pirates who try to capture them, and then a trip to these mountains where he secludes himself and must learn how to meditate once again, where he fights an old dragon and eventually enters into the vault of one of his old magician friends from back in the day, who basically, he built this vault almost like a time capsule where he knew that Lucas Trauman would return and he could come to this place to obtain things which would be helpful to him on his journey. And then after that, we see Lucas Trauman start building an army. And this is actually where I kind of started liking the series a lot, because this is where it stopped being One Punch Man, which it was for a large section of it, and it started making more sense to me. Hey, these demigods are evil beings, and Lucas Trauman was in a war with them, and now what he wants is to finish that war, and he's recruiting people to that end. I'm like, oh, okay, I like this, you know, because before I was like, oh, is this just a story about Lucas Trauman stunting on weaklings? What is happening? But yeah, that's the story plot. That's the story plot in a nutshell. I condensed a lot of it because this was 91 chapters, right? So yeah, with that said, I mean, let's start with general impressions. Helix.
Yes.
General impressions, my man.
So... I like the main character in the way that he actually, like, he's himself at the very beginning, and you'd actually tell that he was pretty human, but as he grew, as he got stronger in power, it actually started changing his personality, too.
That's true. I did notice that, because initially he was kind of an ass, and it wasn't until he started becoming stronger and stronger that you kind of got like that impression that suddenly he's not being that ass anymore. He's being a little more level-headed and responsible. Did you have a favorite character by chance?
Probably still the main character, Lucas.
No. All right, so Lucas Trauman, your favorite character? It's a good favorite character to have. A lot of the story is about him, I've noticed, and we have... other characters, but I feel like we don't know about them as much. You know what I mean?
They don't flesh out the supporting characters too much, honestly, as they gain in power. Like, you can tell that there's only, like, specific ones that get taken with them.
Right. I do believe you are 100% right about that. So, next up, Gamma. First impressions, the Great Mage. This was your recommendation, so I want to hear what you have to say.
Last!
Okay. Okay, fine. Gamma last. It's Sacro.
Okay. I didn't like it at first at all.
Same. I was the same.
Literally 60 chapters in, and I'm like, you guys are making me read this. Like, I've already read this story before. I'm good. Because it reads like a bunch of other manhwas I've already read. Because, you know, I've read like 6 or 7 of them by now. I'm like, oh, it's just the main character's super strong. Girls all like him. Whatever. Normal thing. And he is like that through basically the entire 91 chapters, 92. Whatever it is, because he just shows up and he's like, oh, this kid's so full of himself, and he just beats him up real quick, and he's like, all right, cool, what's next? Okay, we're gonna have another scene of those, we're gonna go plot. Okay, another scene of him defying odds again. It just keeps going where he's just constantly defying what people expect of him. In the first 20 chapters, I did not like his character. I didn't like anybody. None of the characters were interesting. By like the seventh, when he meets the Dark Elves, that was when I was like, okay, I kind of like this character a little bit. Still don't love him. He's still kind of just too good at everything and this and that. And he's cold and calculated sometimes, but also goofy. And he's just boring anime protagonist number 422 or something. But then, like, by the time we're at the very end, when he actually starts working with the demigods, or the one demigod, I liked the character enough to be like, okay, I want to read the rest of this. I probably will read the rest of this at some point. But I did not care for a lot of the side characters as well. Usually I latch myself onto one or two characters. There was none that I was like, this is my character. This is the one I like a lot of. This is the one I'm going to look for fan art of later. There was nothing.
I am with you on a lot of those points. And I guess since Gamma wanted to be last, I'll give my opinions next. I mentioned that I was happy that we didn't stop at chapter 20, because at chapter 20, I still didn't like it. It wasn't until towards the latter half, like, you know, if we're counting percentages, right around 75% of the way in is when I was like, okay, I like this. And for a lot of the same reasons, and I have to lead by asking, are people in Korea okay? A lot of manhwa seem to start with a guy just being horribly bullied. You know what I mean? Like, lookism.
I mean, look at D&D. Most of the time, people make tragic backstories. It's like the trope of most things like that.
Well, sure. But I mean, like, for example, if we look at American animation, if we look at Japanese anime, and if we look at manhwa, I feel like proportionally it is very heavy on the bullying. And not like bullying in the sense like an American animation where, you know, like, oh, we'll call you a dweeb, we'll take your lunch money, probably bump into you and ha ha, loser. But like severe bullying where the person is considering ending themselves. You know what I mean?
I hate to break it to you, but Japan, Korea, probably China, but they don't release their statistics, have high issues with these, with that last part. Like,
okay,
ending themselves, they have insanely high statistics for it because their societies require things out of them. If they don't fit in that mold, they kind of just fall to the wayside, which is kind of what happens in a lot of these stories.
Okay. So, according to Sacro, no, people in Korea are not okay.
No. You should not be killing yourself over video games, but it happens a lot there.
Right. So, really? Well,
esports,
people
gamers,
over there are,
yeah,
like, obsessed with video games too, man. Like, I saw, like, that video of the one guy who played video games for, like, what, 72 hours straight, and then he had a seizure and died?
Yep.
I was like, whoa.
Maybe they're just passionate about what they do, and whenever that passion dies...
They too. Follow.
Oh, no, I did bad in League of Legends.
Did you hear the new League of Legends, like, not slur people are using towards each other? You know how people used to say KYS and whatever? That's bannable now.
Yeah.
The new one is Mom Goes Sky.
Why?
What do you mean? It's your mom's going to die. Mom Goes Sky.
Oh.
That's the new phrase they're using to get around it. Because League is like... toxic no matter what you do.
And that's true.
It is one of the most toxic communities.
Supposedly. I've been called worse in Call of Duty lobbies, though.
The thing is, I've in a lot of game lobbies, you still find people who are courteous. I have never been in a League of Legends game where somebody just wasn't the worst person ever. You know, like, never.
Oh, I've been playing for almost 10 years. I have. There's plenty of good people in there. It's just you also got the bad ones.
Whenever you're low elo, you only get the smurfs that are trying to...
Right.
Yeah. Well, how you look is that too. Ugh, my brother's an almost challenger, and he's just dealing with that crap all the time.
And so I'm going to ask a favor of one of you guys, whoever wants to volunteer, because normally I'm pretty good with names, but this is the one time where I only remember Lucas Trauman and Frey Blake. I remember no one else's
character.
Name. Except for Kasajin. I remember Kasajin because I liked him, but if somebody could pull up the wiki.
Yeah, I have it.
Yay. So people in Korea are not okay. But that being said, just to give my impressions, I felt exactly as Sacro felt, that for a lot of the story, Lucas Trauman just felt like he was just unbeatable. And anytime somebody would show up, it would just be like, oh, I'm nonplussed about you being here. Like, you are no danger, no threat. Even in Frey Blake's body, I do not feel threatened by you at all. and the person would be like, oh, this kid is so smug, I can't believe, so I'm going to use my big magic. And then, you know, Lucas Trauman would always have an answer. It's like playing against a meta deck in Yu-Gi-Oh! with a rogue deck. It's just...
So the way I see that is he's already been level 9 before. He's just using level 9 skills in a level 2 body.
Exactly.
Right.
So
wasn't he using level 2 skills most of the time, though?
True, but he also has the, like, you can't get to higher levels without having a finer control over all your magic. Let's face it, whenever you're dealing with powers that can potentially wipe out a city, your control becomes so fine at that point that it makes a difference at lower levels.
He's smurfing.
I can agree to that.
Exactly, and what it is.
Yeah.
I think the biggest issue with it is that it went on for so long, though.
So, but nobody knows who he is. Everybody thinks
which is weird because he's saying it all the time. I mean, he's like keeping it secret.
But like to the mass majority, he doesn't announce how strong he is. Everybody still thinks he's like a level 2. Whenever he's getting attacked by the pirates, he's technically fighting level 5 beings.
Okay, so Helix. I'm going to drop this because you hit on something that somebody recently said to me, and I think that it's you're trying to say the same thing that they said. So, as you guys know, I'm an actor. And
You're an actor?
No kidding, right? It's incredible. So I go to an acting coach to kind of like sharpen my skills. And recently, I was going to be in a horror movie. And one of the things that I had is a conversation with my acting coach where I was like, I don't know, man. Like, sometimes you ever feel like these characters just make, like, really dumb decisions? And he pointed out, well, nobody in a horror movie knows they're in a horror movie. You know what I mean? So they only make the decisions that make sense to them. And I think that you're kind of, like, hitting on the same point. You
exactly.
know, like, no one sees Lucas Trauman for Lucas Trauman. They only see Frey Blake, and Frey Blake has a history of being the weakest person. So I can see where you're coming from, 100%.
I couldn't have worded it better myself, too.
Yeah, and I feel like narratively, like, so this isn't a complaint with the logic here anymore. You've convinced me. It's a complaint with a narrative now, because I do feel like the author kind of lingered on this for a little long.
And I can flip that and also say pacing is different in these kind of books. You have to get it's not just like one and done. You have to spend some time to get there, and you have to enjoy the journey too.
Damn, Helix just killing me today, man. Like, okay,
like I can understand like all of the characters, like they seem generic to themselves. Of course, in the scope of the story, the world building is different. The leveling is different. The way that they use magic is definitely different than a bunch of the different books that I've read. The fact that he keeps using magic missile, and then the only way he's changing it is just like power, rotation, speed, which is basically going back to Mashoka Tensei as well. Mm-hmm. When Rudeus did the same thing whenever he was testing stuff out.
Right.
So he might not be testing stuff out in this one, but he's sitting there using a magic missile and just not even penetrating the knee and just cracking the kneecap instead.
Right. So it was something that eventually got better, and Brother Gamma pointed this out like early on. He's like, oh yeah, you'll know whenever we're having a shift in the arc. Whenever his hair changes.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, he tied it back. I forgot about that.
Yeah, so whenever he changed his hair, it felt almost like a completely different story, because now he seemed a little more focused, a little more serene, a little less douchey. You know, like he's not a douche, you know, like he's not unlikable, but he certainly felt more mature. You know what I mean? So whenever he changed like that, suddenly it made me pay attention, because it's like, oh, this is a radical shift in the character. And I didn't know what to expect from that. I was kind of like, oh, well, why the sudden shift? And no. So whenever it changed to the point where we saw that he was focusing on bettering himself and gathering allies eventually at one point, I was like, well, where is this going? And now we have the idea of like, oh, well, there are these demigods. They're evil beings. They control everything. And it is my goal to stop them. One complaint I did have about that in a narrative also is that if these demigods control everything and they're evil, everything seems pretty normal. You know what I mean? Like,
it gets a bit worse in season 2.
I agree.
Oh, okay, good. Because I was like,
it gets a lot worse in season 2.
I was literally like, oh, well, these demigods must not be so bad because the things that they're doing don't seem so terrible. But there might be a lot going on behind the scenes that I don't know about. There is. So,
well, they kind of explain at the end of the first season, though.
Right.
They explain there's a god above them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if they step out of line, they'll get destroyed. They'll get wiped from existence.
Yep.
It says it at the end of the first season.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of it. That's why they haven't been ravaging the earth for like the last 4,000 years. They've been kind of just doing whatever they want in the background.
Not causing too
much of a scene where God's just like, you know what? Gone.
There's a power struggle actually going on, so it's not just them.
Yeah, right. I figured there'd be more.
So with that said, that's my opinions. If I had to mention my favorite character, it would be Lucas Trauman, Frey Blake, or Cassagen. You don't see much about Cassagen, but he seems like the kind of character that I would enjoy. You know, like he's just a tough guy who's all brawn, very little brain, but you know, kind of like really proficient at the martial arts. So I'm like,
it shows those two people that show up with his abilities. They both come back. They're both main characters. There's a lot more good. To them.
So the great mages return after 4,000 years.
Where the literal characters come back, or like the versions of them.
I'm kind of wondering if they come back in the same way that Lucas Trauman came back, where like their consciousness like inhabits a vessel. But if that's the case, Gamma or Helix, don't say anything.
Well, I kind of
answers that question.
I couldn't say anything. You were like, "Hey, let me go 100 miles. Let me ask Gamma this," and then poof.
No, I mean, I don't want you spoiling what happens in the second season. Is why I was like, "Don't say anything." I've
been keeping calm about that stuff this time around.
Okay, and I guess last thing is second favorite character, Queen Snow. I will not elaborate.
I know why.
Gamma. Gamma, tell us what your impressions were with the Great Mage. Like I said, you were the one who recommended it, so.
No, Ryan. I want to walk into this room and just say, I take this W over here. All of you like the story. That's all. That's the best part that I like.
Well, I got more to say, but hold on.
Don't take away my W over here.
My bad. Go ahead.
All right. But the way that I see it is, look at this guy. He's level 9. He's the epitome of magic 4,000 years ago. For what we know, that's the highest level. Guy is going to take away his life. And then he says that best line ever. So he's about to off himself and he says the following line: if I can be reborn someday, then I hope I'll be able to leap off the ground and I'll be able to leap off the ground and fly up to the highest place in existence and wash down upon the world from above. I hope I have powerful and mighty wings. And at that time is when Lucas takes over.
So you almost feel like this is like a do-over for Frey Blake, almost, right? Like, except that
someone came back to take revenge for him.
Mm-hmm. The way that I see it is, think of it this way. You got a pro World of Warcraft player, and this low player is getting bullied. You go like, hey, step aside, let me take over this character. And you school the bully with that low-level character.
I see. It's like whenever I hand my, like somebody's like playing a low level deck at Yu-Gi-Oh! And I step in and I play it because I have a higher level of technical understanding, so I can like totally win against everyone because I'm awesome like that.
Yeah.
So it's more like you're playing a fighting game online, you're losing, you hand it to your friend who's a pro, and he just wallops the person.
There you go.
Yeah, like anytime literally anyone takes the controller away from me in Super Smash Bros. Because I am booty at that game. But like, I am so bad at that game. It doesn't matter who takes the controller. They will play better.
We should play a Smash sometime.
I'm going to lose.
Immediately asked to play Smash.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's smash, my dude.
So, anyway, you were saying?
Yeah, like I was saying, he's stronger. And if you notice, some of the skills that he uses, it's almost like it was lost in time. He even points out, like, hey, this is not how you do this. You do it this, this, and this. Even in class, and the professor wants to argue with him.
Right.
And he has to tell him, no, I know what I'm saying.
So, yes, and the reason why I thought was because, after the great mages disappeared or were defeated, it was the case that humankind actually traveled backwards in their understanding of magic. It's something that he mentions repeatedly, that, you know, like, magic today didn't progress almost at all from the time when I was mage, but people don't seem to be using it the same way either.
That's purposeful.
Now, I have a feeling that it's the demigods who are doing this.
Yeah, they don't want to have competition again. The closest they ever came to losing was Lucas, probably.
Yeah, it's like an attack on Titan thing where, you know, like, these people are our greatest enemy, so we just take away all knowledge from the things that came before. That way they pose no threat to us.
Yep. It's like they say if with the history saying, if you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it.
I had a thought. If you've seen the three-body problem, it's that.
I haven't seen the three-body problem.
No idea what that is.
It's a show on Netflix.
Yeah, it's a Netflix show. It's got a really trippy like episode 4, and have you seen it, Bard?
Yeah, all I know is that it's sci-fi as fuck.
It is. It's got a really trippy episode that anytime you watch it, it gives you a sense of deep foreboding because of how like home it hits.
A co-worker of mine watched it, and one time I was driving him home, and he explained it to me, and I was like, okay, that does sound pretty good, though.
It's a nice mindfuck.
Yeah. It's my understanding. It's a three-body problem because the main guy has three bodies, and he's trying to figure out which is the real him. That's not true. I made that up.
Okay. I hate so much that you just did that, because no, it's called the three-body problem because it's about aliens from a planet that has a habitable world that orbits three different suns, and every X amount of years they encounter a catastrophe that basically wipes out their civilization, but they've evolved in such a way that whenever their species dies, they evaporate, and all they need to do is just be soaked in water, and they revitalize, basically.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that sounds like me whenever I've been out drinking.
And somebody from Earth, back in like the 1970s, sent a signal out to the world or the universe and got a response that basically said, hey, this is a bad idea for you to be doing this, sending out messages.
Wait, that's the WoW signal.
Yeah, basically.
From the 1970s.
Yeah, like if you respond to this and we get this, like, we're coming.
I forget who it was. Wasn't it Neil deGrasse Tyson who said that? That is like, hey, you know, no, I think it was Carl Sagan. Neil deGrasse Tyson just was reiterating what he said, where he says, you know, here's the thing. If you're broadcasting your location, you don't know if what gets that signal is going to be friendly, and you just told them where you are. It's kind of like the silent universe theory, that the reason that we're quiet is because there's things out there that we don't want to find us. But, you know, the human race is all like, hey, let's be friends. Kind of like my dog whenever she encounters other dogs, you know, like, it's like, hey, you don't know if they're friendly, but she's like, everybody's friends.
Well, do you want me to continue explaining how it like relates to the three-body problem, or should I just leave it at that? Because
by all means, hit me with it, because I want to hear what you have to say.
So
try not to spoil me on the three body problem, though, because I didn't watch that.
I can't go any further if it's going to ruin the
episode. Ah, damn it. I want to hear what you have to say. Just tell me. I don't care anymore.
So basically what they end up doing, because they learned that humans were advancing so fast that there was nothing that they could do by the time that they reached our planet, we would be so advanced that we'd be able to kill them. They were super advanced compared to us now. But we are advancing so fast that because within like 100,000 years we were basically cavemen. Like the last 50 years we've made such technical advances, yada yada yada. It was like based off of that, they sent a couple of basically protons that they turned into supercomputers to mess with the science of the world, quote unquote. Anybody that was close to making a breakthrough, they would be threatened to stop what they were doing or die. The Large Hadron Collider, the proton would literally mess with the flow of the protons whenever we'd smash the atoms together.
Oh, I see. So this is where you're trying to get it with the demigods. It's like, hey, probably any human that got too advanced in terms of magic would have one of two choices, either be eliminated or be assimilated.
Exactly.
You know, I got you. Okay.
It's literally the Reapers from Mass Effect.
Yeah, from Mass Effect. Uh-huh.
Okay. You know what? The thing is, you know, like, it is a trope, I guess, but we've mentioned before that, you know, tropes exist for a reason, and that's because they work.
It's so nice I'm sorry to interrupt you again, but...
No, go for it.
I like it whenever you can slot it into one, and then it trips you up, and it's just like, oh, I did not see that coming. I guess the mindfucks, obviously. You read for the mindfucks.
Yes. Mm. And I do like that it is that it's also Terminator when you think about it, but it is a tried and true plot. And I guess what happens whenever you do this, whenever you realize what kind of story you're reading, is you kind of have a choice to make. Do you choose to dislike it because it is something that you've seen before, or did the author do such a good enough job creating a good world, great characters, and high stakes that even if it is a story you've seen before, it's one that you're willing to enjoy? You know what I mean?
I can agree with that.
Can we say that we agree that the author of this manhwa, which I have listed as Barnacle?
I wouldn't doubt that, honestly.
Yeah, that's what it shows up on, like, the website that I've been reading it. It says that the author is a person named Barnacle.
I know there are different, like, studios that do translations and they rebrand it.
Yeah, Great Mage returns after 4,000 years. Authors Barnacle. Yes, status ongoing. That's all I got.
Yeah, Barnacle. Yeah.
Barnacle. So Barnacle, do we agree that Barnacle has created a fleshed out enough world or characters or high enough stakes that even though we know what this story is, we seem to be enjoying it all the same?
I like the stakes on this one, honestly.
I don't care for the stakes. I think the characters are super flat. And so the stakes, I just don't care who dies. I really do not care who dies. I'm just reading it because I'm learning things when I'm reading. Oh, that happens? Cool.
I think that we are all in agreement that the characters could use a little more fleshing out. Because I like them, you know, like, but here's the thing. I have yet to find something that they do that makes them memorable, with the exception of exactly Lucas. You know, like, he's the only one where I'm like, I like this character. I understand his mindset. I kind of feel for him. You know, the whole story arc where he went into his friend's dungeon.
Wilsonman.
What was his friend's name?
Wilsonman.
Wilsonman. Did I say that right? Okay. Yep. So he went into his friend's dungeon, and you know, he's kind of like traveling backwards in memory, right? And that to me was kind of like very, very like, okay, I like this, you know, because I can see that whatever was happening 4,000 years ago was something that meant a lot to him. And that kind of, it's something that he carries even now, 4,000 years later, even after having been in prison for so long. It's something that has made enough of an impact on him that it is something that he carries forward, almost like a proverbial cross, if you will. There is something that was left undone, and I am carrying it forward into the future. And so I enjoy him for that purpose, because I do feel like that is something that's worth looking at. But if you ask me about literally any other character, I know nothing about them. I know nothing about what they can do. I know nothing about what I should care about them. I think the main girl's name is Isabel. I'm not even sure.
Yeah.
There's Iris and there's Isabel. All
right. So Isabel is the redhead.
I would argue that there's not really a female like companion for him. It's more like they're just other people that are in there, so they're not necessarily male, they're just females that are close to him.
They just throw a lot of women at him. That's kind of it.
Like, Isabel traveled with him for a good chunk of the first season, though, so I almost considered her, like, you know, she was like his Watson, so to speak.
Yeah.
His Robin, you know, but like, mm-hmm. the thing about Isabel is that I know that she's supposed to be super talented, I know that she's supposed to be super strong, but I struggle to remember any point where she made any kind of significant contribution, you know?
The first apostle.
Yeah, the first apostle. I was about to get exactly there. I was like, I remember that she did huge, she did all this stuff to just kind of like keep his attention drawn while Lucas did his thing, right? But that's all I got. You know, like I know that I almost want to say that, you know, she's like his apprentice, but like we don't see what her process is. We don't know where she's at in comparison.
So I would argue that season one's more him gaining power back to where he was so that he can rejoin the fight.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you.
Compared to what can the support characters do? Because he's so powerful at this point in the beginning that nobody's on his level. Literally nobody's on his level except the top brass from the country. So
not even a leech!
So what you're saying is that season two, he just collects people who are already at his level or near it?
Well, season two expands on the main characters that have already been built upon on season one. So season two will answer. Yeah. I think season two will make you a lot more happy with the side characters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Plus, you also find some story regarding his old teammate.
That's true, too.
Oh. Okay, well, now my curiosity has been piqued.
Like, for example, you get a little bit of Cassigen while he's on school. You'll get some more later on.
I'd argue that season one is, like I said, just building up his foundation for what's to come into season two.
So he died in a Dark Souls type thing, and now he's trying to get back to where he was so he can collect all the souls he lost, so to speak.
He's in New Game Plus.
Well, New Game Plus means he won.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Well, he looked like he was winning until, like, Demigod Lord imprisoned him.
What's that one game, Infinity Blade? You'd keep playing and playing until you died, and then you'd restart at the main character. Okay, Descendant number 62, you're up.
Right. So, I guess, let's see, from this point forward, I've given, like, a lot of my impression on it. Helix, I really like your take on the three-body problem. Like, really, really good. Sacro Gamma, what you guys got? You guys got something else to say?
You could go Sacro if you want.
Oh, okay. I mean, I might complain.
You
for
had
a little
opinions.
Bit. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Let's. I've read almost more manhwa than I've read manga at this point because I preferred watching the anime. So I just like, I don't know. I liked watching it, putting it on the background, doing things that I'm doing, whatever. So I would always watch them, but most manhwas don't get turned into anime. They just don't.
With the exception of almost exactly Solo Leveling?
Solo Leveling did, and they did a lot of weird changes to it.
I would argue that Solo Leveling was a novel first, and they were just basing it off of that.
Did the novel come first?
Yeah. I read the novel way before the webtoon ever released.
Then, yeah, it's a light novel first before it became a manhwa, before it became an anime. Yeah. But, a big issue I've seen in a lot of manhwas I've read is that the main character can never be upstaged by anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just not allowed. Like, the main character has to be the main character.
Yeah, he's the main character.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I feel like I got to interject here because I feel like this might be a cultural thing. And I feel like I say this in literally every episode that this is a cultural thing. But I don't think I'm wrong because I believe that China kind of has the same problem where your main character can have no flaws. Because if he has a flaw, he's not the main character. And I feel like in American animation and fiction and in Japanese, we kind of have a different thing. Because in Japanese, it's almost like you have to be humble, you know. So like your main character can be flawed, but it's kind of like a thing that they have to work on. And in America, it's almost like your main character almost needs to be a rebel. Whatever the status quo is, your main character has to be the one to challenge it.
Well, like, even in anime, though, like, Naruto gets upstaged pretty much all the time by everyone around him until he slowly becomes better and stronger.
Like, right.
Like, Sasuke shows him up the first time. Itachi shows up, and he's just insanely strong. Then you got, like, pretty much everybody else who's doing their thing. They're all these strong characters showing how strong they are. And then this one shows up, and every single character who ever tries to do anything that's remotely their thing, they get upstaged by the main character. He just shows up and says, I'm better. Oh, you think you're good? I'm better.
I feel like my quote this episode should be, arguably, this is a book about a guy on a path to supremacy. Everything he does to, like, so one of the things that I've noticed is common in a lot of these books, like from Korea and China and Japan, a lot of them, like these, are to gain something, you have to believe in it. So if you don't always overcome every obstacle in your way, then how
that
can
means
it
you
then,
didn't believe in it enough
then something? How then how can Naruto you say that it's a supremacy then how can then if you didn't reign supreme over everybody, then how can you call yourself supreme? Then how can you say that you walked the path of supremacy? That's the way that I see it. He's not necessarily always, he's overcoming all odds because he has to, because the path he's on is taking him up to fighting deities when he's merely a mortal.
Yeah, but like overcoming odds is something. This man just walks through odds. There's no overcoming it. He's just like, all right, and there was a gate in my way. Oh, it's an automatic door now, and it opened as he walked through it repeatedly every time. Oh.
But you gotta think about it. He was already at the peak before, so he's just going through the motions at the moment to get back to the peak.
Yeah, but
it's almost like he knows where the secrets are, and so he, you know how whenever you've played a video game a million times, like, yeah, there's obstacles, but you know where they are.
Yeah, but
you know what I mean?
Whenever you replay a game, you know all the easy parts. You get back to the part that you were at. Everything's new. You're going to start dying again until you figure out what you're doing.
Does he start dying again in season two?
No, but
so I was gonna say, wow. Like, my dude just doesn't. Okay, so the manhwas and a lot of manga are just super hard power fantasies. They want your main character to be the strongest and just constantly wowing people. It's really popular. I mean, it's fine. I like reading those stories. Sometimes I get bored of it. I'm like, okay, well, the main character has no struggles really. So like, what are we?
Maybe it's
for?
Not that he's at the struggles yet. Maybe his struggles are still to come.
Well, you even said season two, that's almost 200 chapters, and he's still not struggling with a thing. I don't think he's going to find any struggles except for the very final boss, maybe.
I cannot mention anything without spoilers.
Well, does he actually have a hard time making it through any of these fights or anything?
Yeah.
Or is he just like...
Sure. Actually, you know, come to think about it, like, we might be looking at this all wrong, and I'll give you an example why. Because one of my favorite characters in American comic books is Superman. And the thing about Superman is that a lot of the complaints raised against Superman are the same exact thing, is that he does not struggle. But the simple thing, the simple truth about that is, I don't believe that's true. And the reason why is because for Superman, the struggle is not the fight. The struggle is the ideal. You know, like if so, for example, if we were to strip all the powers away from Superman, the fact that he's still a good person is the reason why he's Superman. Not the powers, it's the person, it's the ideal, it's what they represent. And I think that we have to kind of look at Lucas Trauman kind of in the same way, that he's very strong, But it's not about him beating up the other guy. It's about him pursuing his goal, in this case, a world free of demigod.
To me, the way that I see it is Superman's main struggle is holding back because he wants to give light. He wants to give enough spotlight to his other comrades so that way they're a team.
Well, it's only in Justice League comics and the actual Superman solo comics. My dude is literally invincible. He can spin around the earth and make it go back in time. And Superman can do pretty much anything.
Superman can do pretty much
before
anything.
Before he got nerfed.
So, yeah, well, I mean, he gets nerfed all the time because authors just don't... They think that nerfing Superman is the solution to, like, Superman being OP, but it really isn't. And again, you know, like I'll just throw this out there. Like my favorite Superman stories are never the ones where he's fighting. My favorite Superman stories are the stories where Superman knows that there's something that he needs to achieve that punching it cannot solve. And I feel like this is what we're doing with Lucas Trauman because, you know, he's facing Demigod and Demigod kind of like sealed him away once before and they're in control of everything. And they're stronger than humans, and he doesn't have... And technically, he's a strong mage, but it's implied that even at his level, he probably wouldn't win. So it's almost like the story here is about how do we overcome that? There's action in there thrown for, you know, for spectacle and you know, like, a little bit of like, yeah, that's our boy, doing the thing to reach his goals. But I don't think that it's supposed to be the main focus, you know. So, like, even though there's it's an action fantasy, like, I think the action is secondary to, like, his ultimate goal, you know what I mean?
And he wants to usher mankind to be better.
I hate to compare him to one of my favorite characters of all time, but he's kind of got the Monkey D. Luffy thing going on.
Of all time?
Yeah, I don't want to compare him to Luffy because Luffy's in a league of his own, but it is kind of that thing where he's like, I want the world to be free and I want people to be in control of their own destiny.
Yeah.
And so I'm going there to make that the case.
That's a lot of the thing with the manhwa. They go like, hey, we're fighting gods because they want to be control of their own destiny. Just like it's happening with Lucas Trauman. He wants to give mankind the choice to make their own mistakes, not somebody above, more powerful than them, telling them, hey, you cannot do this. If you do this, I'm going to imprison you for 4,000 years, destroy your land, your people, or make you my food.
So I guess that I would feel a lot like this would carry a lot more impact if we actually saw what the hell demigods were doing. Because, like, right now, I'm still kind of iffy on what their deal is. Okay.
let me put it to you this way. Have you remembered Old Man Logan? The comic?
I didn't read the comic.
Okay.
I only saw the movie, which was kind of based on the comic loosely.
You don't
in Old Man Logan, every part of the United States is divided by a villain. Same thing with the demigods.
So like without spoiling too much, basically what it is right. Is that they all have like divided this world and like are reigning over a piece of it. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. They still don't seem that bad. I mean, because like people are going about their lives relatively fine.
Power struggle. There's a power struggle. Just understand that there's another organization and leave it at that.
Oh, okay.
All right, it's perfect. Like they're governors and then there's Lord, the president.
I wouldn't go too much further into that, or you're gonna spoil a lot.
Yeah, keep it like that.
All right.
But the stuff that I cannot say, the art for it is tight.
Like that, I think that's why I understand like why y'all are just like reluctant up to episode 6 is because there is so much that they had to condense in a short time to get to season 2. Because season 2, it goes into a lot more. Like season 2 felt more fleshed out.
Wait, they condensed it? 91 chapters is condensed?
I mean, yeah.
It's like, okay, watch the first 1,000 episodes of One Piece, and then you'll get it. And I'm like, I'm not sitting through 1,000 episodes.
Here's the thing, though. Like, One Piece, by episode 37, you know whether you're on the boat or not. Like,
I made it to episode 45, and I put it down.
Okay.
Twice.
Yay.
Make it to episode 100.
No.
The reason why I say 37 is because episode 37 is East Blue. That's when they walk to Arlong Park. You know, so like we have seen Nami's story. And, you know, like honestly, for a lot of people, that's the jumping on point because that's when they stop being a band of misfits and start being a crew. And their dynamic kind of shifts in that particular arc, right? But Helix is right that once you get into the Grand Line, things kind of change. I knew that I liked it probably by the time we got to Nami's backstory, I knew that I liked it. The question was I going to stick with it? Mm. And it was Water 7 where I was like, yes, this is fucking incredible. Skypiea almost lost me. Yeah, Skypiea almost lost me because Skypiea was weird. But like, you know,
the first time I read it, Skypiea did lose me. But I'll argue Skypiea is the most important arc.
Skypiea is important because like now when you look back on it, you're like, holy shit. Like that Skypiea was just like full of things that were going to become important later. But the thing is, at the time, you didn't know. So it's like, you know, yeah, now look, in retrospect, Skypiea is fantastic, but like at the time, it's like, I
try convincing that to yourself whenever you were at the peak of Skypiea, you didn't know what the rest of it was. Whenever you're
at the peak of Skypiea, and Luffy is just like fighting Enel, but Enel is just like so strong, it almost feels like, why are we here? Like,
and he had a type advantage.
And he had a type advantage. So, like, I really felt I was like, okay, Skypiea might be where I stop. But, you know, I'm Adrian, right, Helix? So Adrian told me, get through Water 7. And when I did, I was like, this is just peak fiction. Holy shit.
I'll agree with you. I'll 100% agree with you. Because Water 7, I think, is where I got hooked to. Because it was after Thomas, whenever they did Thomas's backstory, when I switched to going to the manga because I wanted to read it faster because the anime was killing me with how slow it was.
The anime is slow. I'm not going to lie. It really is. But the thing is, like, it's almost like, all right, so East Blue, it's like a slow crawl, and then it kind of plateaus for a little bit, and then there's little spikes here and there, and then you reach Water 7, and it's just all up.
It's all gas.
All up. It's like all gas, let's go.
Especially whenever he raids Impel Down. Not Impel Down.
Impel Down and Marineford, where I was just like, I am a straw hat for life, baby, let's go. Like, it is just, like, and which is weird, because that's arguably, like, the biggest L that Luffy takes is Marineford. It is arguably, like, the time when he fell the hardest. And I'm just, like, it's weird to me to be, like, I am super hype and super all about the show at a loss, right? But I'm, like, no, but, like, the thing is, the build-up for it, I mean, my man, yeah.
I think you sent me that picture, too, where it was, like, half him transformed, half him after the fight, whenever he's all bandaged up.
Yeah. But anyway, like,
back to the mage.
Great mage returns after 4,000 years. It's almost like Bard and Helix return after 4,000 minutes of discussing One Piece.
We're selling One Piece, folks.
Spoilers for One Piece.
As a person who doesn't or hasn't read One Piece, every time someone I've heard talk about it, they just refer it to it in the random words thrown together arcs. It's like, oh, Dragon blah 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 was the best arc. No, you gotta watch till Coyote number 6. That's the best arc. That's when they fight the king
Coyote
of whatever.
Number 6.
Like, dude, it's like, why is this just a random arc every time? There's a name. Like, so, how many arcs are
all
there in this?
They're all named after places they go, right? So, like, Water 7 is the name of a city that's floating, and it's just called Water 7. I guess it's because it's the seventh prototype. You know, it's like the seventh prototype of the floating city. I don't know if that's true, but that's my understanding on it. It's named that because of that. And I was like, oh, okay. Skypiea, obviously, is the island in the sky. It's Skypiea.
East Blue is the East Sea.
Yeah, East Blue is the East Sea.
Alabasta is the name of the continent. One of the first islands they go to.
Yeah. Marineford is also, like, you know, where the Marines live. That's where they hang out.
It's very not intuitive.
It's very not intuitive, no. Like, but yes, Coyote 7, best arc in One Piece.
I'm going to wait for somebody to correct me when I start talking in a chat randomly. Like, oh, I like this arc. And it's just random words I threw together.
People start agreeing with you. Yeah, that was a great one.
They're like, yeah, that's great. No, Luffy learned his new abilities. Stretchy Mc... I don't know.
The funny thing is, you can probably say something like Coyote 6 and... people will think you're talking about something that's actually in it.
The Coyote Pirates. Yeah. Like, isn't that what... No, not Coyote, but Foxy.
Foxy.
I was almost there.
Yeah.
And it's like so close but, that people might just think it's true.
Here's the thing, though. I see where Sekiro's coming from, because a lot of them do sound kind of like that. Because, like, say, for example, if I mention, Whole Cake. Me and Helix know what I'm talking about. Whole Cake Island. But, like, that's just two words. It's a whole cake, you know? And if I said Punk Hazard, same thing, you know? Like, it's just words thrown together. So I see where he's coming from, you know? But, like, it's just funny to me because he said Coyote 6, and in my head, I was like, is that a thing in One Piece? It feels like it is.
I just threw out
I'm not going to lie. You started laughing. You started, like, dying of laughter, and I was sitting there thinking, is that something I'm missing? Because I don't remember it.
Oh, I love it.
You know, if Eiichiro Oda can't conclude One Piece, it's up to Sekiro. But Sekiro's just gonna be throwing things together, but somehow that's how it
didn't
works.
Read the first thousand chapters, gonna start making something up. Like, okay, now they go to this place called the Cove of Alabaster, and they're going to fight this man. He's part pig, part crow.
Man pig.
And he also...
he ate the pig fruit.
I don't know anything about One Piece. Hold on, let me figure this out. Fire abilities. He has fire abilities, which is crazy because they're surrounded by water all the time.
So there is a guy that has fire abilities, but like that would mean that the pig guy would have to have killed the fire guy, because there can only be one type of each devil fruit at a time until the user dies.
There you go. He killed the fire guy then, and now he's the...
Not Sabo again!
Hey, there's another one that has fire abilities. It could be,
There's three. There's three. Because when you think of Sakatsuki has magma, and that's technically fire. You're right, though. In Whole Cake Island, you have Oven, who is the son of... Big Mom, who has like heat abilities, which was stupid to me because he's all like, I'm gonna stick my hands in the ocean and boil the ocean. And I was like, it's a devil fruit. If you touch the ocean, you lose your power. How is this working?
There are so many things in Whole Cake Island that I did not get.
Yes, Whole Cake Island was weird. Anyway, Great Mage. Whole Cake Island ended on a whole musical number too, if you ever watched the anime. In the manga, it didn't. But in the anime, dude, it was a Disney musical number. It did end on that. And I thought it was weird. I was like, what is happening?
One Piece.
One Piece! Come aboard and bring along all your hopes and dreams.
Yeah, like we see the girl that accompanies Lucas. She's a three-star mage.
We find out about a treasure in the Grand Line. There's no doubt the pirate who sighs it wrong, it will sing. I'll be king of the pirates.
He's a five-star mage.
I'm sorry, I just had to. Anyway, you were saying, Brother Gamma, I'm sorry I interrupted you.
Oh, no, you're cool because I'm sending recorded lines to you.
Yes.
So even if we talk about each other, you'll know what to do.
There'll be like a whole 15 minutes taken out where me and Helix were just gushing about One Piece.
Like, are we selling the Great Mage or One Piece?
It's a mixture of both worlds.
It takes a lot of chapters for you to really get into it for both.
Then again, it might actually work, since it was a curse episode after all.
That's true. The curse is broken, ladies and gentlemen. Any last thoughts on the Great Mage? And I guess I should like drop in just the question here. Tell me your favorite arc. Tell me your favorite character. And if you had a favorite moment, hit me with that too.
Sadly, they're on season 2.
Okay, so Brother Gamma, in season 1, tell me your favorite arc. Tell me your favorite character.
Let's try this again.
Okay, so I'll go with Lucas. I like the way that he was a jerk at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
He goes like, hey, I like my old woman. And I'm like, I'm there with you, my guy.
You like it because even though he's in a younger body, he's not taking the opportunity to be a groomer?
You know what? I do give that to him. That's a great thing he's done.
He convinced the principal and also the teacher just by talking.
There is no, what do you call it, Edward Cullen syndrome going on here.
Oh, yeah.
And how he took that bully down.
Mm-hmm.
Just going like, hey, I'm going to do the exact same thing that you were going to do to me, just worse.
Yeah, like a lot of comeuppance.
Breaking his bones, making it so he couldn't even speak, so he could give up. The leech, which the leech went like, whoa, you're too strong for me.
I do have to say this. I love the artwork in this.
Oh, that's what sold me on the
character. Was really, really cool looking. Anytime that you have like some kind of entity type character, I think they look really cool. And you know, entity's a weird word, like a creature. You know, like I think they look really cool.
I completely agree.
Mm-hmm.
How the art is amazing, but there's times where the girl that's with him see glimpses of the actual Lucas, and that's when you go like, oh. Snap, is he actually doing something that some other manga does? Or is she seeing him because of his magic power?
Oh, I see what you mean. Like, Isabel. Like, there's many times where she kind of like, oh my god, well, like, Frey Blake, well, who is he? And she's
like,
asking that.
Like, he's really almost, Lucas.
Right, and she's asking that with no context, right? Because she's like, she doesn't know that's Lucas Trauman inside of her. So maybe she has advanced observation hockey?
Yeah, let's go with that.
like good magic senses to where she can tell that even though this is technically Frey Blake, it's not exactly Frey Blake. You know what I'm saying?
Well, at the very beginning, she understands that if she wants to get stronger faster, it'll follow him, which is why she does.
Mm-hmm.
And she had to prove to Blake why he should take her with her so that she had to be useful. So that's the mainly reason why in season one she felt so like as a side character that did all the chores.
Right.
And it's an ongoing joke too, and even in the first season, he constantly makes fun of her because she can't do anything.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Hold on, let me ask you, Helix. Did we see the Phoenix on season one or no?
We did.
Okay.
As a Phoenix.
That's my second favorite character.
Yeah. The Phoenix redesign was really, really cool. I actually really enjoyed that. I thought that looked pretty solid for a creature.
Yes, creature. Leave it at that.
Yeah, creature, quote unquote. Your next, Helix, tell us your favorite arc in season one. Tell us your favorite character. And was there something that you particularly enjoyed about it?
I honestly liked whenever they were doing with the Dark Elves. Because he had actually, I think it was this one. He had met the Dark Elves before he went to go met the actual elves to fight the mage that was doing necromancy in to destroy the area around the elves.
Mm-hmm.
So I liked the Dark Elves were pretty cool. They mm-hmm. normally, in a lot of books that I read, the elves are introduced first, and Dark Elves are always like the antagonists. So it's nice to see the Dark Elves actually have a chance in this one.
Okay.
I still think my favorite character was Lucas. That's just because he's an ass at the beginning, but he does start to get serious towards the end, and he takes what he knows what he needs to do, and he's trying to get there with every option that he can take. Even towards the end there on season one, whenever he actually does swallow the gem to get the divine power,
mm-hmm.
which explains more in season two because he only just has it in season one.
Yeah, but it's something that we didn't mention throughout the entirety of the episode, which is fun to me, is a lot of the ways that he's getting stronger is by, number one, meditating, and number two, drinking creature juices. Yeah, well, elixirs, but yeah, you know, like made from defeated enemies or artifacts and stuff.
I can't argue that, so I'll just leave that alone.
but all right, Sacro.
Okay,
no, I'm sorry. Helix, did you have something else?
No, that's it. That's good.
Okay. Sacro, tell us yours.
Favorite moment?
Favorite arc, favorite character. We're basically in the closing thoughts here.
Still Adelia. Okay. I think she's funny. I think there's a weird thing with all the women drawn kind of the same. I don't know. This guy just has a type. Or whoever the artist
Ichiro
is.
Ichiro Oda and Hiromashima would like to know your location.
Artist has a nice type.
Toriyama. All these women just look the exact switch same. Goku's and...
Yeah, Toriyama's Helix is right.
It's just the hair that's different.
True. Goku
it's,
face.
It's anime, you know, like, you
Goku
give...
Goku face. Well, I'm not talking about their faces. All their faces look different. Their body type's the exact same. They all have
Oda
the same
Oda literally said in an interview that the reason he drew Luffy the way he did was because he didn't want to draw a big, muscly dude every time. He just wanted to draw a simple character.
It's also the same reason why, you know, like, the Super Saiyan hair is blonde is because Toriyama didn't want to keep coloring in Goku's hair.
That makes so much sense.
Actually. Yeah, it's look, when you're an artist, you find shortcuts where you can get them, you know?
Especially when you're having to pump out manga like they did back in the day, or hell, even now.
Even now, yeah, it's still a huge problem.
Yeah.
In
Naruto, when he drew Sasuke the first time, he hated that he had to draw his hair that way because he's like, it looks good, but I don't want to draw this hair all the time. And then it became his favorite character to draw once he got used to it. And then that's why he became his favorite character with Sasuke, and so we'd constantly draw him over and over again. That's why his clothes changed. Like,
I never realized that.
He's always got some new fit. Yeah, Sasuke got the most fits of anybody in the show. Naruto's literally just
here's
an orange tracksuit.
And there's the Shippuden one that never changes.
Here is a fun one for you, Helix. You and I are fans of Jujutsu Kaisen. Gege Akutami had to change two different characters' hairstyles because he didn't expect Jujutsu Kaisen to go anywhere.
Which ones?
So Toge Inumaki... Oh. Originally had a certain haircut in what is now the movie, but before was like the basically like the pilot for Jujutsu Kaisen.
Is that
so
why
Jujutsu
it was
Kaisen
changed?
Zero? Yeah, because if he had kept the hair the same, then he would have looked a lot like Yuji.
That's fair.
And the same thing is with Yuta. Yuta originally had a certain haircut, but if he left it the same, then him and Fushiguro would have looked the same. So he changed Yuta's haircut, too. Anyway, Sekiro, you were saying?
For specific arcs, I guess I really liked the final one they went into where they had to fight the demon guy. I like when he makes the pact with, I can't remember their name right now. The demon
I know you're talking about.
Yeah, I know the one you're talking about, too.
He just shows up in the mine. And he's like, yeah, I can kill you in seconds. He's like, you could, but... Let's talk for a minute. And then he's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get packed with you again. That's cool.
Yeah, we knew each other back in the wind.
I hate you, but we're buddies. Yeah, so they become friends, and then he leaves, and he's like, okay, so this guy I used to work with, he sucks. Let's break that bond. I'll see you later. No need to deal with this guy anymore. And then he gets murdered by his demigod.
I think it was Asura.
Asura. Yeah, for Azura's wrath or whatever. That's why that came in my head earlier.
Which was a cool design too for a creature, for an entity being. Yeah, it was also a very sick design.
Yeah, I liked the elf, snow elf. Queen girl, Snow. I can't remember her name, top of my head.
Now, did you like Queen Snow? Did you like her as the?
Yeah, she was cool.
The apostle
as her alter ego.
Yeah, or
their apostle form. I mean, I liked both. She, like a lot of the other characters, feels really generic. Like, no real personality beyond
the
pretty girl that hangs out with them. I was hoping it would, but I feel like she's going to end up on the wayside again.
No.
Like, everyone else just ends up on the wayside.
I mean,
my man's journey is more
important. I can agree with you some there, but there's development for everybody. Like, it's probably not going to be as...
Like, development, or more like, they show up again, they have a new thing they're doing, and then you're like, all right, see you later, I'm going to go... climb this mountain over here. You'd
no,
be stronger by the time I get
development.
Back. Okay. I was hoping to be development, but like 91 chapters in, the only character who developed was the main one, and the Isabella kind of becomes better. She like learns from him, but most of her development started in the beginning, and then she kind of follows him around. Like, she's just like, oh, I'm here, by the way.
Like,
stuff happened.
Like, we know that But, we know that she's doing things because she constantly mentions that, you know, like we did see her try his method of battle meditation. But also she does make mention that I am doing, like, I notice that he is way above me and that I have to do what he does to get better. So, like, we know that she's trying to do what he does in an attempt to reach his level.
It kind of reminds me of Frieren. How she has, but she actually develops her whole character, her personality, her abilities. You see everything as she's developing in 25 episodes or whatever it is.
It's interesting in that we have a character who, for all intents and purposes, has reached the apex of her being, and we are seeing the method of her development through flashbacks throughout the story.
Yeah, yeah. What I'm saying is that they have a side character who's learning from them, who already is Fern. This great person. And you see her develop as a person. Fern develops as a person, develops her magically. Everything about her is actually, you know, pretty decent. Then Isabella's just kind of there. She's like, oh, she's stronger now.
Well, good for her.
What did she do? I'm happy she's stronger. What did she do? And she doesn't do anything most of the time. They left her at the training thing at one of the circles.
At the Trauman rings.
Yeah.
Okay, I can understand where you're coming from. But I think I can agree with you that a lot of these books do that.
Yeah, it's not an issue. I like reading them still. I just get kind of bored with a lot of
the
stuff.
Because it's always about the main character, not and you get bored on the character.
Yeah. There's a very few shows where the main character becomes my favorite character, and this one he didn't, but he would have because there's just nobody else who can compete with him. There's another character where I'm like, oh, he doesn't have a rival character. He doesn't have this or that. Like in Naruto, it was Sasuke. In One Piece, I kind of have a few characters I liked besides Luffy because I just didn't care for Luffy as much, even though I know he's the most popular character in the entire show. And then in Bleach, I don't have a fair character, actually, because I forgot all about
Chad was cool for a while. Whoops, Bleach exists. I was really hoping that Chad would be excellent, and no. Mm-hmm. They had that tomboy girl who was kind of like a little bit psychic sensitive, and I was like, she's going to become something cool. Never heard from her again.
What happened to the spiders?
Most of them died. There's like Nell-El, I think.
Grim Joe survived.
Well, yeah. even in Thousand Year Blood War, I think a lot of them, I think more died. I could be wrong, though.
Hmm. Bleach kind of went off the rails, and I stopped caring about it a little
bit. If they had just ended it with Aizen, that was a perfect ending, I would have been happy.
That's where I stopped watching it initially. I literally stopped with Aizen, like, when he loses his powers. I'm like, all right, cool.
I understand that there is a whole story arc where they can go off with his mom, which is what they did with the last two, but I liked the ending to Aizen. It was such a perfect ending. Like, yeah, there were still some loose ties, but damn.
I don't know. They kind of peaked with the save Rukia arc, honestly. Which is the second
thing
arc
about
of the
that
show.
Is that they peaked so hard with it, they did it a second time with Wekamundo, only this time they were saving Orihime.
Yeah. So the fight with Yukiora is really awesome, though. But that's about it. Shad gets a new power, goes through his whole thing, talks about his past, and then loses.
You're not supposed to do that. Hey, if you talk about your past, you're supposed to win. That's like a hard and fast anime rule.
Because the main character pulled out a bullshit transformation out of nowhere.
Yep, he always does.
Literally the first time he unleashed that too, so that makes sense.
What's that? There's a movie with a new power? He's gonna have it too.
I mean, honestly, it's Superman syndrome. Superman's been going back to what Bart said, he's been retconned so many times because he's had some of the weirdest powers.
He has every power at once, but like Goku literally couldn't win, so he's like, power up, could win again, power up. It just kept happening. I mean, Naruto doesn't always have new power ups, but he still gets new power ups.
What I like about Naruto is that after a while, it's not like you're getting new power ups. Now it's just like you're getting smarter with the skills that you have.
Yeah, like
and I really appreciate that. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's so bullshit whenever it's like, oh, can't win, new power, I guess. But whenever it's like, oh, can't win, how about I get smarter about the way I do things? I was like, oh, I love that.
Like
thank
the pain
you.
Fight whenever he figured out a way to use Sage Mode in the.
You still lost that fight though.
True.
He lost the pain mode.
You have to admit, he actually went in there prepared, thinking that he made enough preparations. But he didn't realize that his opponent had more preparations.
Yeah, his opponent was just better than him, and then he had to talk no jutsu through the rest of the fight, because that's what you do.
Well, that's what you do.
Well, if you think about it, he was facing basically somebody that was also trained by a legendary Sannin that had the ability of one of the most powerful
the Sage of the Six
ocular
Paths?
Abilities.
Yeah. The one that's like, asking yeah, later.
That's fair.
Naruto did a damn good job of killing most of them.
He did do a good job.
Bard, you know who else has the talk no jutsu?
No. I mean, like, literally everyone.
Yuji?
From Jujutsu Kaisen?
Yep.
I haven't gotten to that part yet. Like, honestly, I'm just like post...
You saw that arc!
Post the Shibuya incident?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, he had, like, the whole talk with Mahito, but that was really about it. He's just kind of, like, chasing him, being like, hey, you know what? You curses are going to curse.
No.
And I'm going to beat the hell out of y'all. That's just how it is. It's inevitable.
The other guy that calls him brother.
Oh. Yeah, him and Toto.
There's Toto.
I love those two together.
And there's the demon painting.
What is his name? Chozo?
Yeah.
Those guys together, fucking fantastic. I'm not 100% convinced that it isn't Yuji inadvertently doing something with a power that he doesn't know about that's making these people crazy about him. But I dig it. I would love it instead if Gege Akutami just never explained what's going on there. He's like, why is it that Yuji will have an enemy and then somehow the enemy gets an epiphany and now they think that they're his brother? I'm like, you know what? Just do not explain. This is just too funny. Do it a third time, in fact. But
oh, when Toto drops that necklace, just priceless.
Damn it. So I guess to close this off, I'm going to tell you guys about like my favorite arc and my favorite characters and parts that kind of stood out to me. So my favorite arc definitely is the one where they're going into his homie's dungeon. I liked the implication that there was a bigger story that we were finally getting to understand. And going forward, I like that Lucas just kind of seems a little more focused with a goal in mind. It's something that I really, really enjoyed. Plus, in order to get there, he had to kill a big, big dragon, and that was kind of dope. So let's see, favorite character. I mean, it's hard to say anyone but Lucas. But if I had to pick someone, it would be the strong guy at the end whose name escapes me. The guy who was already working with the other demigod. You know the one? Dude.
I'm looking it up right now.
Do we know his name?
Iris?
No, not Iris. He's the big strong guy. He's the one that seems to be doing as good as Kasaji. Ivan,
yeah,
yes.
That one.
So my second favorite character besides Lucas would have to be Ivan. I like him. He's kind of a character archetype that I enjoy. The big strong guy who has like a soft spot for pretty girls, but he can't talk to them. Love that. Every time I see that, I'm like, I like this character. And I think if there's one thing that stands out to me, it's Lucas does kind of have this tendency to not tolerate bullies or people who make excuses. And these are things that I kind of, and I compared him to Luffy earlier, but this is a Luffy trait that I really enjoy about Luffy. He doesn't tolerate bullies and doesn't tolerate people who make excuses. It's ultimately like, hey, you know, you want to be strong? Get strong. You know, like there's nothing stopping you except yourself. There were several panels that I kind of sent out in the group chat where I was like, I do, you know, because Brother Gamma, you had mentioned that Lucas reminded you of me. And yeah. I didn't see it until then, whenever he says, "This, how did I get this strong? Effort." And I was like, damn it. Like, you know, that's it. You know, like that's exactly how I think. It's like, hey, you know, like how do we get to the next level? Effort. We try. And if we fail, we get up, we try again. That's just the way I function. So whenever he was, there was the, oh God, these are the characters whose names I don't remember. He made a friend with a guy on the pirate ship when they were fighting the Lich. He's from
the rich guy.
The rich guy. What's his name? Yes, June Paruan. Yes. So him and his fiance. What's her name?
Hold on. I'll find it real quick. No, I won't find it. Oh yeah, Sonia.
Sonia, right.
Oh yeah, so, I forgot about her. I liked her.
Yeah, so she was cool. Like, and she was kind of like this knight, right? And whenever we first meet her, she's kind of fighting against these guys, right? And she's outnumbered. Everyone else has fallen. And of course, you know, Lucas being Lucas just kind of shows up and walks all over them, right? And then they kind of travel together. They meet again at the Paruan estate, where, you know, Lucas had mentioned about effort, and she's kind of trying to hide these scars that she has on her arm, you know, like from all the training. She herself being like very self-conscious about them because, hey, you know what? She's engaged to like this rich guy, and here she is with like these scars on her arm. And Lucas kind of says something to the effect of, hey, do not be ashamed of these things. These things aren't, you know, ugly. They're traces of effort. If anything, you should wear them with pride. And, like, see, I resonate with that so much, where it's just like, yes, you know, like, sometimes when you're trying to accomplish things, you're gonna get hurt. And those things that you carry with you, whether they be, like, mental scars, emotional scars, or some kind of, like, you know, trauma, you try to hide it because it's ugly, but at the same time, it's like, these are proof that you survived something that tried to harm you, you know? And I'm like, you shouldn't be ashamed of that. As a matter of fact, you should be proud, stand proud with it. And so, like, these are the times where, like, Lucas acted in a way where I was like, okay, I see it. I see why this is good. And I'm curious to see where he goes, you know? So yeah, that was my favorite part of the entire first season. He left with the other demigod whose name I want to say is Ricky.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ricky.
Okay, yes. Ricky. Yes. I remember. Oh, I was like, oh yeah, demigod named Ricky. I'm like, Ricky, really?
Olin Bar.
Yeah.
Since he appears on season one, he's my guy right there.
Okay, Ricky is your guy. Good, good, good.
Yeah, that's why I didn't want to say anything.
All right, so yeah, so he leaves with Ricky off to meet with the other demigods. So I'm like, yeah, like, fantastic. Let's see it. I want to see where this goes. So yeah, you know, that is The Great Mage Returns after 4,000 years. Season one, we had opinions. So I'm going to do something different here at the end of this episode. Guys, one by one, would we recommend it? Sacro.
Why'd you start with me? Hold on. if you like a strong characters, but not strong in a traditional sense, and like he's physically just insanely impressive, you should read it. If you want more out of your side characters, and you don't want to read 180 chapters to get anything out of them, I would say no. Don't even look at it.
We're going to count Sacro as a no. Gamma?
If you want to go on a journey, that's worth it. And almost as good as One Piece. And less than 1,000 chapters.
I mean, those chapters are long, though.
These are long chapters. I agree with Sacro. I would say,
but it's less than 1,000 chapters.
Yeah, 195, and
we also don't know where they're gonna end. So I mean,
they're gonna end when the man passes away, and he says, "Here you go. I scribbled on a napkin somewhere. Write this," and that's it. That's the end.
I take issue with you saying it's almost as good as One Piece. I do not agree, but it's got One Piece elements in it. So I mean, for whatever that's worth.
You'll see the rest of the One Piece elements on season two.
Okay. Because one of the good elements of One Piece is good world building, and I think this world's kind of flat, so I mean...
Oh, you'll see the world
is very
okay.
Flat. I didn't think about that. Yeah, it's very flat, actually.
It is.
So
there's a lot of peaks,
we're counting...
A lot of mountains.
We're counting Sacro as a no, we're counting Gamma as a yes. Helix.
Honestly, I like Psychros too, because if you've got time to kill and you want something good to read, yeah, sure. But if you don't read often and it's not something that's like in your wheelhouse, then yeah, I'd steer clear as well. Like, okay. I like action though, so I don't mind the like ones like these. I'll always read these. This is an easy like 3-day read for me.
We're gonna count Helix as a yes.
Took me 2 weeks. It took me
a long time too, dude.
I was like admiring the art, like, oh, it's really pretty here, and I'm like, oh, I haven't read in a little bit. Let's keep going.
I think I finished season one in one day, and I've got like I think I got hit chapter 100 the first day, chapter 150 the second day, and the third day I finished it.
I read 30 chapters.
You did.
And that was me reading it almost the entire. Well, I didn't read the entire day, but I was like 2 hours on my couch.
See, we kept pushing it back as the recording of this episode initially because I couldn't catch up fast enough. Like, I kept thinking to myself, yeah, it's just a few more chapters. I'll get there. And I just could not. So, like, I was like, crap, we have to push back another day. So whenever I finally made it, like, the day that we were supposed to record it for real, I read, like, 40 chapters that day just to get to where we needed to be. And then we had to cancel for a different reason.
I'll be honest, most of the times with me,
I'm not gonna lie, but I think we pushed this episode back like 8 times total. Like, it was a lot. And so for those of you at home, that's why we keep referring to this as the cursed episode, because it just would not happen no matter what we tried.
Yeah, the last time we scheduled it, I had a back spasm, and I blamed these guys because they scheduled it like 8 a.m. whenever I woke up, and it happened, and I was like, I hate you guys.
Yeah, we were like, hey, we're recording Great Mage tonight, right? And then Helix is like, ah, my back!
Usually I fly on his back on his bed.
It was hard to sit down for like... it happened Friday night. No, when did it happen? Saturday morning? One of those two mornings, I can't remember. So I had Saturday, Sunday. Luckily, I came into work yesterday and I was able to sit down, because Saturday night, I wasn't able to sit in my chair and lean back. Anytime I'd start leaning back, I would like twitch so badly because my back started stinging.
I recommend ice bath. We're counting Sacro as a no. We're counting Gamma as a yes. We're counting Helix as a yes. So let's see. I would say...
I'd say yes if you have time to kill. No if you're like
don't want to read 100
so it's a maybe.
Plus chapters to actually get into it.
If you're not one of those ones that like reading long books.
I'm kind of like absorbing your vibes here. Like, I'm not just hearing what you're saying now, but I'm hearing what you said throughout the entire episode whenever I kind of like generalize what your answer is. So, you know, like Helix, you kind of stood up for it a lot and you made some really great points.
Well, so again, I've read lots of books like this, so I like to argue the negative.
Devil's advocate.
Yeah. Like why you should pick it up, or your point is this, let me flip it around and think of the point that's happening in the book as well. That could be another point of view.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that also, because here's the thing. If I hadn't adopted that mentality, we would have stopped at chapter 20 and I wouldn't have liked it. And so like the fact that I made it all the way to chapter 91 and I did is kind of like a testament to that. It's the whole don't judge a book by its cover thing, which I think is stupid. That's an idiom that's accurate, because when you really think about it, that's what book covers are for. Like, it's got a synopsis of the book in it. It's got a picture that tells you what it's supposed to be about.
The picture like, draws
you should
you
be
in,
able.
The words keep you there.
You should be able to judge a book by its cover is what I'm trying to say. But that's neither here nor there. What I am trying to say is, in my opinion, it is long. It is very long before you can get to like a semblance of the story having merit, or like having any kind of deeper merit than just, oh, cool guy, you know, beats other dudes with magic. Which, if that's your thing, dude, like, I'm not gonna turn you away from it. As a matter of fact, I'm gonna say no, this is 100% for you. Me personally, I like stories that have a lot more substance, you know. So if we can get some kind of like a philosophical quandary on the inside, or like some kind of like deeper meaning in there, it is something that makes me like a story more, which is why I enjoyed this one more whenever I got to know more about Lucas, when I got to know more about his goals, when I got to know more about his personal philosophy. I was like, okay, now I like it. So it is long. It takes a while to get to that point. If you just love action and you know, cool art, like really good art, just excellently drawn characters, creatures, and environments, this, you can't go wrong with The Great Mage. If you like your stories like me to kind of like hook you in with a little bit more depth right out of the gate, and you don't have the patience, then probably not something you might enjoy out of the gate, off the bat. So I would say that because I had the experience of reaching the end and actually enjoying it, I would be a yes, which means that this is a 3 out of 4 we would recommend.
Yay, good job, team. Curse broken.
Yay! Curse broken.
Yeah.
And now it's going to take us 9 other tries to record the next one.
Coming up next time.
No, I think that...
Let's figure out which one we do first.
Is it Helix or is it Sacro's turn?
It is Sacro's turn.
Oh, it is? Let's go.
Yes, yours... We asked initially what we were doing. I said Kaiju number 8. Gamma said The Great Mage Returns. The next person to answer was you. And Helix had said that he would decide later, or that he would put titles on a randomizer wheel and decide that way.
Awesome.
And so, yeah, Sacro, you're the one who picks next. And your choice in that case. Do you want to like do an anime? Do you want to do a manga? You know, we could do both. With that being said, we're just going to close this one out. Great Mage, 3 out of 4, would recommend. And thank you for joining us on the Battle Face podcast. Be sure to follow us on our socials. We are on Instagram at the Battle Face. We're on Twitter at the Midnight Bard. You guys are on Twitter too, I guess. I don't know.
I'm at Sacro Games. I actually don't know what my Twitter handle is.
I'm not on Twitter.
Sacro Games.
Stay off Twitter.
Gamma is at Gamma Akutabi. And Helix.
At G Akutabi.
Helix just, Gamma at G Akutabi.
I'm a hermit. Helix, I don't have one.
I was going to say, Helix lives under a bridge somewhere. If you know the right bridge at the right time of day, and you know the password, a portal opens.
Questions 3.
But until next time, I have been the Midnight Bard. These have been the boys. Adios!